Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Labor on the move. What several unions accomplished this week, and that includes Starbucks workers in Buffalo, New York. Scabby the Rat wins again. And today on the show, the latest from the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades and the Ohio State Building Trades. Welcome to the Friday, October 1st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Hard to believe it's October, 3 months left of 2021. And since this is the first Friday of the month, that goes to Mr. Dorsey Hager, Executive Director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, ColumbusConstruction.org. And I'll tell you, there's a lot going on in Central Ohio. Number one, we're going to talk about the Ohio State Building Trades Convention. And of course, we'll get an update on construction in Central Ohio. Building futures, driving futures. That's a big topic of Dorsey. He's all about attracting younger people to the trades or to truck driving, and that's what those two programs, and apparently they had a graduation recently. There's also a mentoring program that he's tied in with the NAACP and the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Pathway to the middle class. There's a lot of people. I often say they're born in the wrong zip code. They're in the inner city. They're in pockets where they feel they have no way out. Well, get involved in an apprenticeship program, and guess what? You have a way out. And we're going to pick up on that with our second guest, Mike Nisley. Mike is the president of the Ohio State Building Trades Council, and we'll get kind of a wrap-up of where we are with the 14 councils that he represents. We'll also take a look at what's going on in the General Assembly. I always ask Mike, when we have him on the show, what kind of crazy things are coming out of committee, like attacks on prevailing wage, right to work? You know there's a handful of lawmakers, and we have to make sure they remain just a handful, try to dwindle that down to just a couple. Eventually zero would be really nice, but they keep coming up and saying, you know what? Other states around Ohio have gone right to work. We should do the same thing. I just wish they'd listen to that governor in West Virginia, Jim Justice, who said they got rid of prevailing wage, they passed right to work, and all the jobs that were promised didn't come. That's the person they have to listen to. And since he comes from the Lima, Ohio area, this is something we touched on in a previous show. There's a refinery there, and a lot of the jobs have disappeared. It's involving a takeover by another company, and it's kind of like a shutdown, a temporary shutdown. And they usually, when they do that, it goes to union brothers and sisters. This time it didn't. So we'll see what he has to say about that. Mike Nisley, our second guest on America's Workforce today. Several union locals made headlines this week after a number of hard-fought contract fights were brought to an end. On Tuesday, Unite Here locals 34 and 35 announced that they had reached an agreement with Yale University on a new contract to cover some 5,000 clerical, technical, culinary, and maintenance employees from next year to March of 2027. Whoa! The still undisclosed agreement, following on years of contentious relations between the university and New Haven's union-backed Board of Alders, is expected to be ratified at each union's respective general membership meeting on the 20th of this month. Meanwhile, yesterday, San Francisco's Local 2 secured a new contract with Bon Appetit, covering 930 concession workers at the San Francisco Giants Oracle Park Stadium. Among other benefits, the new contract includes retroactive wage increases of $1.50 an hour, a separate $3 hourly raise with yearly increases through 2024, a freeze on healthcare premium rates, and listen to this, a 60% bump in pension benefits. Wow, I don't know how they pull that one off, 60%. Having voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike earlier this month, union members are now expected to vote in favor of that agreement. I would think so, yeah, especially with those pension benefits. Unite Here was not alone in reaching major agreements this week. On Wednesday, the Communication Workers of America, and this is Local 7901, they reached the first collective bargaining agreement in the banking industry in over 40 years, securing just cause protections, 401k benefits, minimum pay levels, and this is for 96 beneficial state bank employees. Hats off to the CWA on that one. Now let's go to Buffalo, New York, and this is appropriate because today, October 1st, is International Coffee Day. Yes, it's an occasion that is used to promote and celebrate coffee as a beverage. Coffee is the most loved beverage in the world. So, with that being said, workers at three Starbucks stores in Buffalo, New York, announced they have formed a union, Starbucks Workers United. Starbucks argued to the NLRB that the bargaining unit should encompass all 20 of its stores in the Buffalo region. While the three organized stores employ a total of about 70 workers that would be part of the bargaining unit under the union's proposition, if Starbucks wins its argument, that bargaining unit would be increased to about 450. This is pretty slick. They do this all the time. Starbucks' key argument for including all regional stores in one bargaining unit was that their decisions about store operations take place at the regional level, and the employees routinely transfer from one store to another in carrying out their job duties. Now, for the union, an expansion of the bargaining unit could lead to a defeat similar to the result at the Bessemer unionizing drive in Bessemer, Alabama, that failed when they went against Amazon. I recall that one was to include, I think, 1,600 workers. This is Amazon I'm talking about. Amazon said, no, you got to incorporate more, and it went to close to, I believe, 6,000. Now, that one is under review. Well, there's more to this story. In addition to potentially forcing the inclusion of entirely unorganized shops, requesting a hearing on the voting block of the bargaining unit results in a delay in any potential vote, during which Starbucks, well, you know what's going to happen here, they are able to hold captive audience meetings to pressure workers into voting against the union. Brian Murray is a member of Starbucks Workers United. He put it simply, the longer these elections drag on, the more workers get afraid or disillusioned. And Starbucks is doing everything it can to prevent their unionization effort from succeeding, evidenced by the fact that even the Starbucks president has been going to the Buffalo store trying to identify supporters and which workers are wearing union pins. The president of the company is doing that right now. Wow. Massachusetts Institute of Technology Graduate Student Union publicly announced its unionization campaign this week. The group held a kickoff rally with reportedly 1,000 grad workers in attendance and has begun collecting card signatures. The union's stated goals are to fight for fair work expectations, necessary work resources, funding security, affordable housing, comprehensive benefits, and protections for international workers. Let's go to California, where their governor, Gavin Newsom, has signed a slate of worker protection legislation designed to benefit Garment industry workers, domestic workers, workers with disabilities, farm workers, and workers suffering from wage theft. One law ends piece rate compensation in the garment industry in California, which has been used to pay workers below minimum wage, and expands liability for unpaid wages and wage theft for fashion brands. Another law creates an advisory committee to recommend state policies to protect domestic workers' health and safety. Also, I want to point out that the law prohibits employers from paying workers with disabilities less than the minimum wage. And the law targets farm workers, defining them as essential workers in order to give agriculture workers access to state personal protective equipment to protect them from wildfire smoke. And you know how serious that has been in California. All right, we have to take a quick break here. You're listening to America's Workforce. When we come back, Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. And before we get to Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, I mentioned at the top of the show that Scabby the Rat has won again on Tuesday. Members of the National Labor Relations Board have affirmed again the lawfulness of Scabby the Rat. This was a unanimous opinion. Members McFerrin, Ring, and Kaplan held that the board's administrative law judge erred in finding that the rat's deployment against a so-called neutral firm violated the National Labor Relations Act ban on secondary boycotts, noting that protesting the neutral's dealings with unnamed rat contractors. I can't believe I'm saying this. Unnamed rat contractors was distinct from the union's dispute over recognition with the primary employer. This case, which involved the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 150, was one of several prepared by former general counsel Peter Robb in his quest to ban the rat from union protests. The case marks the third time since July to uphold Local 150's use of Scabby the Rat. Dorsey Hager, I have to ask you about these unnamed rat contractors. I'm sure there have been many in your line of work. How are you doing today, brother?
Doing great. Scabby the Rat has made many of an appearance in Columbus and Central Ohio. So, yeah, I'm glad to see that he's still alive and well and making his way to non-union job sites to protest and bring to light some of the poor working conditions and wages that some of these contractors pay their open shops. So glad Scabby the Rat has survived the Trump administration. Because, you know, they tried to put the nail in his coffin. You know, Peter Robb, a high-profile, you know, anti-union lawyer. You know, Trump just really stacked that NLRB board. And as soon as President Biden was elected, that was the first thing he did, was got rid of all those people and totally revamped it, which is great for organized labor. Great for all workers in the country, actually.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have a very, very pro-labor National Labor Relations Board. I mean, they put labor back into it. It was anti-labor for years, not even just under Trump. I mean, even during the Bush administration, it was rough, you know, from both Bush administrations. But yeah, times have changed, definitely, in Washington. All right, you wanted to talk about the Building Trades Convention, the Ohio State Building Trades Convention. In fact, we're going to pick up on this with Mike Nisley. He's going to be joining us later in the show. But I'd like to get your perspective on it. Go ahead.
I thought it was a great convention. We had delegates from all around the state, from all the trades, come into Columbus. It was at the Hilton downtown. We started with our board meetings and committee meetings on Sunday. Monday was speeches, resolutions, took care of some business. Tuesday we finished up with the election, the VPs, the president and the executive secretary treasurer. Mike's going to be on your show, so obviously he was reelected. Congratulations to him. Congratulations from Mark Douglas from the IBEW. He was reelected as president. But I thought Mike and Mark, Matt Salazzi from ACT Ohio, did a great job with the whole convention. We heard a great legislative update from Matt Salazzi. He spoke to the delegates for about an hour, hour and a half. Mark Johnson, who's head of the Tri-State Building Trades, and he's also a representative in the State House, I think out of the 92nd District, he spoke about current legislation and some of the things that he's doing to educate his caucus members down at the State House and educate others about, you know, organized labor. He gave a great speech. Of course, both of our senators spoke, Rob Portman and Sherrod Brown, and, you know, Sherrod Brown did a wonderful job. Frank LaRose spoke, and he talked about the integrity of elections and how the elections were ran really well here in Ohio. And we just had a great group of speakers. It was nice to reconnect and catch up with everybody, you know, from Marietta, Cincinnati, Toledo, Cleveland, all four corners, and it was good spending a couple of days there at the Ohio State Building Trades Convention in Columbus.
You mentioned Frank LaRose in voting, and I'm just wondering, did any conversation come up? I know it went well in the state of Ohio, but that being said, there's a lot of states that are really, really clamping down on voting. Did that come up in the conversation at all?
No, it didn't come up at all. And, you know, there were very, very few cases. I can't remember how many. He said how many, and it was very, very low. There was very, very few cases of voter fraud in last year's election, which, you know, was a presidential election, record amount of turnout in the state of Ohio. I think over 4.6 million people voted in the state of Ohio. So, no, he didn't talk about any of the election laws or anything like that. He did, you know, just like I said, say that there was a few cases of voter fraud, but I can't remember how many, but it was very, very low, very, very low. And, you know, it seems like the mail-in balloting and all that worked really well last year across the state. And I think that helped with the turnout, especially in a pandemic. And I hope it's something that we can continue on. The one thing that I was talking about to a few political friends of mine the other day, which I was disappointed in, is I remember Ohio used to have a 10-day window where you could go in and register an early vote at the same time. And unfortunately, the legislature did take that away. And I thought that that was a great tool to be used, you know, when we were trying to get our members registered to vote, that they could go in, have that 10-day window of both registration and early voting to make it convenient so they could go in, register, vote the same day. But, you know, they took that away. So now you have to register by October 4th for this year's election. And then, you know, I think the early voting starts the next day. And you can vote early in person or absentee ballot all the way up until Election Day, which, you know, is November 2nd. So that's the only thing that I've seen that's been restrictive here recently in Ohio's voting laws. But you are right. A lot of states around the country are copying Texas voter restriction laws in Georgia, and they're looking to do the same thing in their states because they would like to, you know, like to tamp down some of the turnout.
Oh, it's up to, I believe, 18 states right now that have clamped down. You mentioned this took place at the Hilton Hotel in Columbus. I'm just wondering, and I know past conventions, past years, everything's been done virtually here. How did that go, and how was the attendance? I'm just wondering, because we're still in this pandemic.
Yeah, we're still in this pandemic. As you know, there's a mask mandate in the city of Columbus. Mayor Ginther, by executive order, did a mask mandate. And then when city council came out of summer recess, they adopted the legislation. So there is a mask mandate in all public spaces. You know, I haven't heard of anybody getting sick coming out of the convention. It seems like everybody was good and well. You know, we had social distance. You know, I don't want to say 100%, but almost everybody was wearing masks. Plenty of room in the ballroom that we were in for the meeting, so we were all kind of spread out and stuff. But I think it went really well. I think it was done safely. You know, it was great that we could have it because, you know, we missed it last year because of the pandemic, so we were off a year on the schedule. But, yeah, I think it was great that we had the convention, and I think it was done pretty safely. And everybody came out of there pretty happy, I think. So
good, 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 good. All right, the other thing you wanted to talk about was Issue 7, and this was to vote no on Issue 7. You got to tell me what's going on there in Central Ohio with this issue.
Yeah, so we were just talking about voting in elections, and I mean, we have some important races here in Columbus, even though it's a municipal year and people don't always understand that elections aren't every 4 years, they're every year. We have some very important races here in Columbus. Shannon Harden, Nick Bankston, Lourdes de Perosa, De Padilla are on the ballot for city council. Nick and Lourdes will be replacing two longstanding members of city council, Mitch Brown and Priscilla Tyson. Shannon Harden is up for re-election. He's the president of council, so he's kind of leading the charge to get the team elected and get them across the finish line and get them re-elected. But we've endorsed all three of those. We're trying to be as helpful as we can. There's numerous judge races, municipal judge races, and you and I have talked at length on this show about how important judicial races are. So there's a lot of judicial races that are incredibly important that we've got to let our members know about. But the other one, and I did a press conference with the mayor 2 weeks ago and also leaders, community leaders from Central Ohio. The Issue 7 is a dark money group, I believe, out of Indiana, has came in, got signatures, got on the ballot. And basically, if Issue 7 were to pass, then the city of Columbus would have to give about $90 million a year out of their city budget to this dark money group to basically run Columbus's energy policy. So on the outskirts, it looks good because you're like, oh, here, this group's going to run Columbus's clean energy projects. But it's a bad piece of legislation that, if passed, would take effect because there's five people to this group. One person that's on there doesn't even know who the group is. They haven't had any meetings. It just seems like a power grab or a big money grab. And this group that's done this has done this, I think, in 17 cities across the country. I don't know if they've been successful yet, but they've done this across the country. So we're working with city leaders. We're working with community leaders. We're working with labor and other leaders of business around Columbus Central Ohio. We're trying to raise money. We're trying to get out to let people know that this is no good. I just had a meeting a couple days ago where I discussed this with President Watson from the NAACP. She's going to try to get her members out to vote no on this, but also to encourage their friends and family members to vote no as well. Because, you know, municipal elections, I mean, I'll be shocked if we hit 8% participation in the city of Columbus. I hope it's higher, but there's just very low turnout on municipal elections. We got to make sure people turn out to not only support the candidates that support labor, but also to vote no on this Issue 7, which could be devastating to the city and the city budget. You know, if you take $90 million out of the city budget, the budget every year is a little under $1 billion. You're looking at cuts to police, fire, safety. You're also looking at huge cuts to the capital improvement budget, which is going to have a direct effect on my members because there's going to be less projects to build and maintain, less bridges, less roads, all that stuff that we do in the city of Columbus to help this city grow and improve. And it's just going to be a devastating effect. So anytime I can speak about it, I'm out speaking. Make sure that we're going to vote no on Issue 7.
Any polling on this issue to give you an indication of how much support it has in that area, Dorsey?
Yeah, so the polling I've seen, it's about 50-50 right now. But if I say we because we endorse it, so I consider myself part of the team. If we can get on radio and if we can get on TV, and also if we get on the sample ballot, which starts being distributed this weekend, I think you'll see the polling get better in our favor. But right now it's about 50-50. And again, they're preying on the confusion of community members, because if you don't know anything, if you don't read up on anything, and you go into the and read, there's about five or six paragraphs that are going to be on the ballot that describe issue 7. The first paragraph talks about the importance of clean energy. So if somebody just stops reading there, they're going to be like, "Oh, this is great. I'm going to vote yes on this."
Yeah.
If they don't read all the way through, it's not going to be good.
To your point, Dorsey, it's all in the wording. I reference right to work. And, you know, when you talk to people, "Oh, why don't I have the right to work?" Well, wait a minute. You have to understand what right to work is all about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very clever how they phrase these. And you said a lot of dark money. Do we have any idea how much they're spending on issue 7 right now?
I have no idea yet, but I know, like I said, it's a dark money group that's going to come in, and if they can get this passed at the ballot, they're going to be looking at, you know, $85 to $90 million a year that they're going to have total control on.
Yeah.
So, and very, you know, in other cities where they've been successful, very little of that money that they've taken has gone to actually executing clean energy initiatives. It's really gone to them and how they want to spend and administer it, you know, which is, you know, after this is defeated, I think the leaders in the city got to figure out a way to change the city. I almost said the city code, but that's not it. But how legislation gets approved and stuff. I think the city charter, we have to change that so that way that this can't happen again, because we can't constantly have these fights with these dark money groups. It's too costly. It takes too much time away from some of the good things that the city is doing.
I hear you. All right, Dorsey, I got to take a quick break. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line, as he does each and every month here on America's Workforce, columbusconstruction.org. You can follow them on Twitter at BuildCentralOH. Later in the show, Mike Nisley of the Ohio State Building Trades will be joining us. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate a 5-star rating. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Dorsey Hager on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. I know you want to talk about building futures and driving futures, but I want to bring up the vaccine. A couple of interesting things are happening in America right now. Well, more than a couple. I want to start off with hiring managers. And this was a survey of 1,250 hiring managers, and they found that 33% will automatically eliminate resumes that do not include a COVID-19 vaccine status. And check this out. 69% of hiring managers are more likely to hire someone who has already been vaccinated against COVID-19. 63% of companies are mandating vaccines for employees. Big story yesterday was United. United Airlines said, if you don't get vaccinated, you're fired. What was it? They fired almost 600 people this week. Is that right?
I think it was 593 United employees terminated for lack of, vaccination. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, who's going to be able to fly United tomorrow? And then you read it and you see that it's actually less than 1% of their total workforce. You know, United is huge when you figure in everybody, you know, gate agents, travel agents, ticket takers, you know, baggage handlers, pilots, everything else. So 99% of their employees receive the vaccination because of this vaccine mandate from United. And I think that you're starting to see that more and more, where you're seeing a lot of these companies had 50, 60, 65%. They institute the vaccine mandate. And of course, you're always going to have people that are not going to want to get the vaccine for whatever reason, you know, that they give. But I think that you're seeing these numbers really, really climb when private employers and private companies institute the vaccine mandate. I know there's a large company here in Columbus, a Fortune 500 company, that they've instituted the vaccine mandate. And November 1st is the drop dead date. You got to have your first dose on your way to full vaccination, or the people are going to be terminated without an exemption as well. So I think you're seeing it really, really, really being pushed. And I'm really surprised and amazed how the business community and the chamber has kind of wrapped their arms around this. I know, you know, we talked about the mask mandate earlier, the city of Columbus imposed, and there was a lot of small business leaders at city council who were frustrated that this was being put on them. But a lot of your regular size businesses, your large businesses, your businesses that belong to the chamber, and even the local and state chamber of commerce, it's my understanding that when House Bill 248 was getting ready to come out of committee to be voted on, which was going to basically make any mandates from private employers unconstitutional or illegal, my understanding is that the business leaders and the leaders from the chamber, state and city of Columbus, were down there at the state house lobbying Republicans, telling them, hey, I better not see your name on House Bill 248, you know, because they didn't want it. They want their businesses to run. They want people to be safe. They want their employees to be safe. And the last thing they want is like what we saw last year in March, April, and May, when everything was having to shut down. So, you know, the Speaker, Bob Kupp, the person who was carrying House Bill 248, who was going to be able to get it out of committee, he left the bill in that committee, took her, I can't remember who introduced it, but took her off of that committee, moved it to another committee, so that bill died and never saw the light of day on the House floor. But all these things are very interesting. You know, we're starting to deal with it here in Columbus as well. We're seeing a lot of large customers that we routinely work for mandating the vaccine. All the healthcare facilities are doing it. So if we have members that build hospitals or maintain hospitals or healthcare facilities, you know, if they're not vaccinated, unfortunately, you know, they're not going to be able to work in those facilities. We're having some of our unions as well, because they want their members to be safe, obviously, that are instituting cash incentives and drawings to try to, you know, get their members vaccinated. But it's an ongoing battle. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's really going to be interesting to see what comes out of some of these appeals and Supreme Court decisions. I see that there's a group of teachers in Los Angeles County, which LA Schools is the largest school district in the country. 10% of the teachers there are unvaccinated, and I think their vaccine mandate goes into effect October 15th. So those teachers have filed a legal brief with the state Supreme Court in California that's we're going to wait to see if it's been heard. The Court of Appeals in New York stayed the vaccine mandate for New York public schools. So we'll see what happens there. But it's all very interesting. And here's the one thing, too, is, you know, I don't, you know, unless we can reach, you know, the herd immunity through the vaccine or whatever other means possible. You know, like I was reading an article on Norway the other day, and they haven't had a case in months. I was reading an article on Mexico City, shockingly. You think of Mexico City, you don't think of one of the wealthiest, you know, places on the planet. But Mexico City has a 100% mask mandate. Over 80% of their residents have been vaccinated, and they haven't had a single case of COVID in months. So, my thing is, where does this end? Are we going to still be doing this next year? Are we still going to be doing this in 7 years? Or where are we going to be at with this? That's my thing.
Dorsey, I hear you on that. I think the tide is changing, especially with a lot of these big companies saying, hey, you better get vaccinated or you're going to be out of work. And when you're out of work, you're going to find a lot of places that are not going to hire you because you're not vaccinated. So we'll see what happens here in the next couple of months. All right, let's get into building futures, driving futures. I guess there was a recent graduation. Yeah, so what's the story on that?
Yeah, so speaking of COVID, we had to cancel our graduation a couple weeks ago because we did have an outbreak with some of our partners in building and driving futures. So, you know, to make everybody safe and to make sure that we had maximum attendance, we suspended the graduation for a couple of weeks, and then we put the building futures kids and driving futures kids together for one large graduation that was held at the Teamsters Hall, you know, the historic Teamsters Hall and iconic there in Columbus, downtown Columbus, Ohio. Great job by Josh Kincaid and Mark Van Dack, the business manager or the president and business agent of the Teamsters that helped us out with this graduation. But we combined them. We had 29 kids from both programs graduate. And this was the first time in the history of our program that not only did we graduate 100%, but we placed 100% before graduation. So every kid who has graduated from Building Futures has been placed, you know, either a painter or an IBEW, plumber, pipe fitter, sheet metal worker, you know, insulator, whatever trade they chose that we placed them. And then all nine of the Driving Futures graduates, all nine of them have been placed. So 29 for 29 with this Building Futures and Driving Futures cohort, and that brings our statistics for the year for 59 out of 63. So we've graduated 59 kids out of 63 who have taken the classes this year, and all 59 of those have been placed. So I think our graduation rate's right around 97%, our placement rate's at 100%. We're not going to do any more Building Futures cohorts for the rest of the year. As of now, we're having some issues with supply chain issues with metal, steel, drywall. So while work is going great in Columbus, you know, we're a little concerned about the need for apprentices right now, so we're going to hold off. But if that changes, you know, at the flip of a switch, we could do another cohort. But for right now, there's none scheduled. But we do have another Driving Futures cohort scheduled to start in 2 weeks. One of our biggest union employers here in Columbus right now is offering a $12,500, it's prorated over 6 months, but a $12,500 cash sign-on bonus. And their first-year drivers are averaging right around $105,000 a year.
Wow. $12,500. Now, what do you have to be with them for a year to get that bonus then, or what?
6 months. It's paid over the first 6 months. Yeah, paid over the first 6 months. Yeah, so
not bad.
There's tons of opportunities in Columbus, Ohio. Our Driving Futures program just continues to roll on. It's amazing how we do a cohort, you know, and there's always that little uneasiness when it starts. You know, are we going to place all these kids? And then by the end, they're all placed, and we're talking about other companies who are hearing about it and signing on and interested. And, you know, the big holiday push is going to be coming too. So we're going to have UPS, which is a huge union employer that's going to need drivers, and Teamsters. You know, Sigma is a huge employer here in Columbus, Columbus Distributing, you know, so it's a great program. I gotta hand it to Josh Kincaid and all the work he's done with the Teamsters with the Driving Futures. Kelly Harrop, our new communications director, is doing a great job running and coordinating Building Futures, and Leland Bass, the program manager over at our partner, the Columbus Urban League, and of course, all three county commissioners, Kevin Boyce, Eric Crowley, John O'Grady, and then Joy Bivens, who is works at the county as well, who oversees the program. But it's all hands on deck, and we're doing a great job. And one of the great things that I think is going to come out of it for next year too is we're looking at a mentoring program, partnering up with the NAACP and the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, you know, President Nana Watson, who I mentioned earlier in the show, and then President John Lacey from CBTU. So if we can get this mentoring program instilled, place these kids with a mentor while they're starting, while they're going through the program, and then while they're graduating, you know, not necessarily to help them out with issues on the job site or contract issues, but just help them out with you know, in life, you know, if they're having issues or if there's anything that comes up or any barriers that's keeping them from progressing and going through their apprenticeships or going through their job placements. So it's an exciting program. We're laying the groundwork right now. We're working with Mark Flew-Hardy from the Ohio Central Labor Council, the AFL-CIO, and also John Wentz, our attorney, who also represents the Columbus Workers Center. So we're going to lay the groundwork, get this thing going. But I just think it's another tool in our toolbox to make sure that we keep tweaking this program and we keep it successful, so we keep putting these kids and young people and young adults on the direct path to the middle class.
Dorsey, do me a favor. Send me all the context with that, because you know that National Apprenticeship Week is coming up. I can believe it's like the second week of November, and we're trying to highlight programs to get young people. And like you say it so many times, it's the pathway to the middle class. What a great opportunity here for young people, especially those in those impoverished areas. And you know there are many. There are so many. And they don't feel they have a way out. But guess what? You get involved in the trades, look out. Or driving a truck. $100,000 got my attention.
That's absolutely right, and I know I've said this before on your show, but if I go to a local high school or if I go to an association and I speak, you know, people look at me and they're like, eh, you know. But if somebody who's in the program, somebody who's graduated from the program, that's another thing that Kelly's instituting. She's instituting an alumni group so that way, current and past graduates from the program can come back and talk to the kids and work with the kids and stay in contact with them, because I think we have 135 graduates from the program now that are out there working in different trades jobs, working for the Teamsters, working for the IBW, working for whoever. But, you know, when those kids come back, and, you know, we had Charles Straley speak at graduation, a kid who was in and out of jail, you know, for some issues dealing, you know, with drugs and stuff like that. And he saw no way out, and he was getting ready to turn back to that life. And then he saw a video about this program, did a great job, graduated. He's placed with the team, the iron workers now. I think he's a third year iron worker. And he's, like he said, this job has changed his life because of the pay and benefits it provided him and given him the opportunity to get right into the middle class.
Doesn't get any better than that, no doubt. All right, my friend, we're going to leave it on that note. Dorsey Hager, Executive Director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, and the Twitter handle, BuildCentralOH. You take care. We'll talk to you in a month, my brother. All right?
All right. Thank you so much. Hey, go Browns. We got to keep the momentum rolling. We got to beat the Vikings Sunday. So I'll leave it with that. Go Browns, beat the Vikings.
I am ready for a 3-1 record. All right, buddy. Take care. Dorsey Hager on our live line. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Mike Knisley of the Ohio State Building Trades coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly and Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly and Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. Certainly a good thing. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number two and welcome back to the show. We always check in with Mike Knisley. Maybe every 2-3 months, Mike is president of the Ohio State Building Trades Council. OhioStateBuildingTrades.org is their website. Hey, Mike, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Doing great, Flash.
Good, good, good. You had a recent convention. Dorsey Hager was talking about that. Before we get your perspective, I want to find out the latest on that refinery. What is it, Cenovus? Because I know you're from the Lima, Ohio area. And we talked about this, I want to say, maybe 3-4 weeks ago. We're talking, what is it, like 3,000 members of the trades that are going to be, I guess, replaced temporarily. What's the story here, Mike?
Yeah, so the shutdown starts next week. That's a true statement. 3,000 building trades members will not be working on that 35-day outage there in Lima, you know, with probably 50% of them from the Lima area, and then the other makeup of 50% probably within a 60 to 90 mile radius of Lima. So this affects not only the Lima community, Northwest Ohio, but the state of Ohio it's quite an economic impact on that. So, yeah, the building trades and myself are still trying to work with the owners to get through this debacle and move forward with this. I truly believe in the end we're going to win this war, so to speak. We might lose this battle here this fall, but I think moving forward we're going to come out stronger than ever with this.
So this turnover or temporary shutdown, normally it goes to the building trades, but they're going to bring people from other states, from down south. Is that the story?
Yes. And so the contractors that have been selected by Synovus are from the Gulf Coast. So you're getting Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, all those people are, you might as well just say you can put that money right in an envelope, mail it right back to those states. So they're going to get the windfall of the wages, the tax base, everything leaves the area. The only people that come out on top is just the restaurants and the hotels. But for the most part, the community takes the blow on this thing. So as well as you don't know what's coming into your community either.
Right.
It could be, COVID cases. It could be crime. It could just be all sorts of things. And then the people that come in have no accountability or responsibility to the community after this thing gets done, where your local building trades, I don't care what city and state you're in the United States, you have responsibility and accountability to the communities you live in. So a lot of issues at stake here. It's the arrogance of these large multinational companies is just unbelievable with my dealings with them. When you do not even respond to a U.S. senator's letter with strong support, not only for the building trades, but for the communities in Ohio, and you don't even have the graciousness or the courtesy to respond to not only him, but the Speaker of the House, the Senate President here in Ohio, the mayor, the township trustees, the local building trades, state building trades, the arrogance is just unbelievable.
This kind of reminds me of what's going on down in Alabama. I don't know if you're following the coal miners' strike there at Warrior Met.
Yes, I am. Yep.
Yeah, here's a company, and these workers, these coal miners, and you know how tough that job is, they took pay cuts, they cut back their health care because the company was going through a bankruptcy. Now that they're profitable, and this is a Wall Street buyout, let's be honest, they even went to Wall Street to protest. But now that they're making money, they don't want to give in. They just want to reap all the profits. I mean, same kind of scenario here. It's so sad. It's so sad.
But
you said you feel confident down the road that you're going to win this. What makes you say that? Is that because of so much community support going on right now?
Yes, it's been unbelievable. This has been going on since January 1st, and the signs are still in the yards, support local workers, support Ohio workers, the local building trades, the laborers, international, everybody's rallying around this. And we're still doing the work day to day on the maintenance, which is hundreds of jobs. I want to point that out. We're still doing the contracts, the construction in the plant, for the most part. And that's why I feel when the smoke clears on this thing, I think Synovus is going to realize that they made a mistake. You'll never get corporate America to admit it, but they'll figure out a way, to put some talking points out there. But at the end of the day, I truly believe that the building trades are going to still be in that plant, but we are going to continue to raise the awareness with these owners that they have some sort of accountability and responsibility to these local communities. And this is going on up in Toledo, Ohio. It's going on out in Cheyenne, Wyoming. All across the country, there seems to be a disconnect between large corporations and the community residents that live and work in these facilities or live around and work in these facilities for decades.
Right.
With that's the issue that I have. The union building trades have been maintaining this plant for over 100 years in Lima. It's 137-year-old facility, goes back to the Rockefellers. So it's just disturbing, but this is what labor does. We don't look for a fight, but if there's one, we're going to engage in it, and we're going to stay consistent, and we're not just going to give up. It's just going to be consistent pressure holding these corporations like Cenovus and British Petroleum, that's a joint venture up in Toledo, and Marathon in Canton, Ohio, accountable for their actions, so to speak.
Well, you keep feeding us information. We're on five platforms right now, so we here at America's Workforce will get the word out there, because this has to stop. It really has to
Most
stop.
Most appreciated.
All right, I want to switch gears here. You had a convention. Dorsey Hager was talking about a pretty good convention, and I say, congratulations, you are reelected as president. So maybe you can give us your recap on what happened at the Hilton Hotel.
All right, so we had a two-day convention there in Columbus. We had to postpone this for a year because of COVID. Department of Labor allowed us, instead of doing it every 4 years, we went 5 years. So just to point out, you know, I'm the executive secretary treasurer of the organization. Our president, Mark Douglas, he's out of IBW in Akron, Ohio. Myself and Mark, as well as our 12 trade vice presidents, were unanimously reelected with no opposition. So that's always great. What was another high point is the type of speakers and the bench that we had, so to speak. So Governor DeWine opened the convention up. We had Senators Portman, Senators Brown speak, the Secretary Treasurer of North American Building Trades, Brent Booker, Secretary of State of Ohio, Frank LaRose. Tim Ryan was scheduled to speak flash, but he developed COVID that day, was tested positive for that, so he wasn't able to make it down. And we had a couple other speakers in there. But it was a chance for us to reflect back 5 years. So just some high points. In the last 5 years, the building trades here in Ohio, union construction building trades, have worked 262 million hours in this state. I think that's a phenomenal economic impact to the state of Ohio with that. And so we've also, in the last 5 years, had zero anti-worker, anti-union legislation that got passed in the House or the Senate. We've been able to keep that at bay, another high point on there. And it was just a way for us to reaffirm we're going to continue to go in a positive direction. We're going to continue to work for our 138 individual trade locals out there in Ohio, our 14 councils, you know, providing the services that we do down here in Columbus for across the whole state of Ohio.
So no legislation attacking workers, and this was in 2020 that you're speaking of?
So we look back all the way to 2016. We you know, do a five-year, what's happened since our last convention. And so we are very proud that even though it comes up in the House, you have these goofballs all around the state that just want to attack workers, you know, whether it's their wages, their right to belong to a union, certifications.
Whatever it is.
And we've been able to hold that off and tamp those down in the Republican-controlled governor, Senate, and House legislation, all three branches. And so we're very proud of that, because a lot of our neighboring states, Flash, you know, maybe with the exception of Pennsylvania, but a lot of our neighboring states, especially Indiana, West Virginia, Kentucky, they're just getting beat up. If you're in organized labor, you're in the crosshairs in some of these states. And we're very proud that we're not in the crosshairs, and we've been able to keep this, you know, off the book, so to speak, with any kind of anti-worker legislation.
Mike, you mentioned the goofballs that keep reintroducing right-to-work legislation or attacking prevailing wage. They always say, well, everybody else is doing it, so, okay, we should do it as well. Yeah, okay, uh-huh. But congratulations to you on that.
Yeah, appreciate that. It was a great convention. It was great to see everybody. We had close to 200 delegates down here from all across the state. So great representation. We feel at the end of the convention, everybody had a great time, and we accomplished some things while we were down here. So I'll give it an A-minus.
An A-minus. Okay, we'll work on the A-plus next time. All right. All right, my friend, we have to button it up here. OhioStateBuildingTrades.org is a website, OhioStateBuildingTrades.org. You stay safe. Let's do this in a couple of months and see what's going on, okay?
Thanks, as always, Flash.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the Sprinkler Fitters and the Service Employees International Union. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.